Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of the Men and Science Podcast. I do sincerely hope you all are having a lovely weekend and you will hopefully have an even better weekend. And please make sure you subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, Google Podcasts, CastBox, Radio Public, and YouTube. And please make sure to follow me on Twitter at IamFazitu for any and all future podcast information. Hey, yeah. Now, this episode is my usual post-pay-per-view podcast where I'll be recapping WWE Clash of Champions, Monday Night Raw, SmackDown Live, the USA Network premiere, live premiere of NXT, and the upcoming WWE Draft. Now, I haven't been feeling too well this week, so if I don't sound my best on this one, I sincerely apologize. And I'm also listening to the Spider-Man 3 soundtrack in the background. Don't know how well you can hear it, but I mean, hopefully it won't be too loud, so it won't be too distracting. Anyway, that's enough rambling. Let's get right into this thing. We had a Clash of Champions this past Sunday, which, like I said on my predictions podcast, I really wish I could have gone. It was in Charlotte, North Carolina, and just me, to an extent, I kind of enjoyed it a little more than I did SummerSlam. I mean, wasn't a great pay-per-view, but I enjoyed it more. But that's just me. And I did not see the kickoff show because I was in the shower. Because, you know, I don't even remember what it was I was doing that I had to take a shower during that time. But yeah, I missed the Cruiserweight title match and the U.S. title match, which I'm surprised that was on the kickoff, because, you know, I thought they valued the U.S. title more than the IC title. But it shows how much I know. But yeah, I got Gulak prediction correct, and this one, Styles and Alexander, because I thought it was going to be on the main show and they were going to give it about 15-20 minutes and it'd be a show-stealing match, but it was about, you know, 5 to 10 minutes at most, and it was essentially a squash match. But yeah. But then we opened the show proper, as Simon Miller would say on What Culture, with the Raw Tag Team Championship match, the Rollins and Strowman defending against Dolph Ziggler and Robert Roode, and this was a pretty good match. Yeah, it wasn't great, but it was good enough for the kind of match that it was, because, you know, we were all just wondering how, you know, what was going to happen between Strowman and Rollins that was going to tie into their Universal title match at the end of the night. So, I mean, yeah, it was a good match. Good way to start the show. And we did get the little shenanigans-ish at the end of the match where Robert Roode was going to do the glorious DDT on Seth. Then Strowman came in and did his little shoulder tackle and bumped Roode into Rollins, and then he's like, oh no, what did I do, blah blah. Strowman gets knocked out of the ring, and then Roode hits Rollins with the glorious DDT, and we have new Raw Tag Team Champions. And Strowman stormed out, upset that his partner had lost, even though it was technically his fault, since he bumped into him, but, you know, it is what it is. And he said that, oh, I didn't lose the match, Rollins lost the match, blah blah blah. And then we had another match that I thought had a potential show stealer behind it, but that's the bottom. Another 5 to 10 minute match. SmackDown Women's Champion Bayley against Charlotte Flair, and Bayley won, which again just really surprised me. Not so much that she won, just especially the manner that she won, because she won in a very chicken shit heel way, which, I mean, I don't mind, because I'm in full embrace of heel Bayley, and but it's just, especially because, you know, Charlotte, North Carolina, it is Charlotte Flair's hometown, the Queen City. And then it's just, I don't know, it was just a match that was just kind of there. It started out good with, you know, the bell rang and then Charlotte went straight for the boot to the face. But then it just, yeah, it just kind of suddenly ended, and then Bayley, you know, just ran out right out the arena. I don't know. I mean, where they're going to go with this, you know, moving forward, I have no idea. But, you know, that all ties into everything that went down with the Raw Women's title match and the what happens on Monday Night Raw and SmackDown as well, which I will get to in a little bit. And then apparently it was just tag match after tag match going on with this part of the show, at least. Was the SmackDown Tag Title match, Revival versus The New Day, and this one was a very, very good match, which we knew it would be, because both teams are great tag teams, and they are two of my current favorite tag teams in WWE. And it was a great match. It told a great story with, you know, Big E having the injured arm, and then Xavier Woods having the injured knee, where that was the main focus of the Revival throughout the match, targeting Xavier Woods' knee. And just, I just really loved this match. It was a great tag team match. I guess you could kind of say old school tag team wrestling from like the late 80s, early 90s, like what you would have gotten with like Hart Foundation versus the Brainbusters kind of match. But yeah, I loved it. Revival won, so they are I guess you could say Triple Crown tag team champions, because they are NXT tag champion, Raw tag champion, and now SmackDown tag team champion. And I don't know if there's any other team that's done that in WWE, but if I'm wrong, then somebody will tell me. But yeah, it was a great match, and I loved it. And up to that point, it was my favorite match on the show. And then we followed this up with, well, before we had the actual match, it's a Raw women's tag team match. You know, Bliss and Cross against Fire and Desire. They had an interview segment backstage that ended with the 24/7 contenders chasing R-Truth, because he was disguised as a boom mic guy during the interview segment. And then the match started, and about halfway through the match, R-Truth and the 24/7 people ran down into the ring, and Bliss tried to score a pin on R-Truth, and then he got the hell out of there as well. And then we went on with the rest of the tag match as if that had never happened. It was a good match. It's just, I didn't really like how they took the focus away from the women to do the 24/7 stuff, which, I mean, I get it. They had to do something with the 24/7 title, since it was Clash of Champions. All the belts had to be on the line, so they had to do at least one segment with the 24/7 title. So I excuse it for that part of it, at least. But I enjoyed the match. It was fun. It was entertaining. I'm just hoping that moving forward, the women's tag titles will be taken a little more seriously, given more respect. Even though I loved when Iconics were champions, but that's just mainly because they just entertain me so much, and I love them. And hell, I was after SmackDown this week, I was on YouTube, basically binge watching a bunch of old Iconics videos on the WWE YouTube channel. I miss those women. They haven't been on WWE TV in about a month at this point. I just miss them. But yeah, Bliss and Nikki Cross retained, so we'll see where they go from there. And then we had the Intercontinental title match, Shinsuke Nakamura versus The Miz. And this one was a pretty good match. Didn't go that long. It went about, I would say, 10, maybe just over 10 minutes. It was pretty good. Had a steady back and forth. And a couple of times it did seem like Miz was gonna come out of it as the new champion, tying the record with Chris Jericho as 9-time Intercontinental champion. But no, Nakamura hit him with the Kinshasa and was victorious, retaining the Intercontinental Championship. And where, you know, we go from here with the Intercontinental title, hopefully it'll be utilized more on WWE TV. But we shall see where we go from there. And then we follow this up with the match that was my favorite for the entire pay-per-view. Was the Raw Women's Championship match, Becky Lynch versus Sasha Banks. And I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one who feels that this was basically the best match of the entire night when you look at the overall presentation of it, especially. And it's just, I love that, you know, that the women are getting, like, with matches like this, that they're getting better attention and more screen time and given more time on the shows to be able to utilize all, you know, their skills and show off better. And I mean, it ended in DQ, even though they never rang the bell and announced it. Well, they did announce it, but they never rang the bell, signaling the disqualification. because Sasha Banks, being frustrated, decided to bring in a steel chair and tried to get Becky Lynch with that, or, you know, trying to pull an Eddie Guerrero with the fake out with the chair and then doing some other shady stuff. But, you know, Lynch got the chair and ended up hitting the referee. He was knocked out for like 500 years after that. And then they brawled all over the arena, which was pretty cool. Lynch had Sasha in the disarmer with her arm locked in the top part of the steel chair. So that was pretty cool. And obviously it's going to lead to a rematch, which I will get to when we get to Raw. And then we follow that up with the WWE Championship match, which was another very, very good match as well. Kofi Kingston retained, but I was really, really hoping that Randy Orton was going to win. And then, you know, they have the one more blow-off match at Hell in a Cell, but I guess, you know, they wanted to move on to something else, which, you know, if you watch SmackDown Live, you already know what's up next for Kofi, and I will get to that soon. But yeah, I enjoyed the match a lot. It's just, again, I really wanted Randy Orton to win. I really did. But, you know, at the same time, I'm not upset, because at least this one was, you know, Kofi's best match since becoming champion. At least in my opinion, it was. And then we follow this one up with what I was surprised to be a very good match. Eric Rowan versus Roman Reigns. No disqualification. This one was a fun match for me. I've always said, like, I know a lot of fans don't like Roman Reigns, but he can have great matches, you know, with the right opponent. Like, he had great matches with AJ Styles, had a great match with John Cena at No Mercy a couple of years ago. His match with Daniel Bryan at Fastlane 2015 was a very good one as well. He can have good, great matches when with the right opponents. So, and this one was one of those great matches. But the highlight of the whole of it was the return of Luke Harper assisting Eric Rowan in taking out Roman Reigns, which, I guess, you know, all those reports from, you know, Uncle Dave Meltzer, as they call him, saying that Vince, you know, just doesn't like Luke Harper, and he's gonna let him sit at home and let his contract run out. You know, I guess, you know, that's just another unfounded, you know, report, or just another bullshit report from Dave Meltzer. So, a lot of stuff that Dave Meltzer has been saying lately, and the people take it at face value, but then, because, yeah, that was the big rumor like a week ago, that he was just going to let Luke Harper sit at home and let his contract run out. But here he is making a big return on pay-per-view in a main event storyline. So, yeah, fuck Dave Meltzer. Eric Rowan won, obviously, but yeah. And then we have the main event, the Universal Championship. Seth Rollins defending against Braun Strowman, and this one was a very good match as well. I mean, it wasn't Seth's best. Maybe you could say it was Braun Strowman's best match. Best part of the match itself was when, two highlights from the match itself, when Rollins dove from the top or through the table outside. I don't have to look at it again, but then Braun Strowman did a splash off the top rope, which was pretty cool. But the highlight of the entire pay-per-view, after all was said and done, we got the appearance of The Fiend, Bray Wyatt, and like I keep saying, he is the best thing happening on WWE TV right now. And just him showing up at the end when they made it seem like it was all over, and they had the little copyright WWE thing in the corner, but then it was not over, and we all knew what was coming when the lights started to flicker, and it was a great way to end the show, and I loved that. And just, again, just like at SummerSlam, The Fiend was the highlight of the entire pay-per-view. Bray Wyatt, you give him shit, he turns it to gold. my understanding from everything I've read and heard, and I don't have insiders, I'm not like, I don't have a source or anything like that, But just everything that I understand of Bray Wyatt and the Fiend persona, that this is all the brainchild of him. So just let him keep on doing what he's doing, because it is gold. Here we are for Monday Night Raw. Monday Night Raw was in Knoxville, Tennessee, apparently, which I did not know about until they, you know, blow the segment that happens after the opening segment on the show. Well, second, but yeah. Let me start all over again. Then we move on to Monday Night Raw, and we kicked it off with Seth Rollins doing a basic, you know, I slayed a SummerSlam, I slayed the beast, last night I slayed the monster kind of promo. And then it was interrupted by Bray Wyatt and the Firefly Funhouse, and Firefly Funhouse is always a great thing. So, just basically, again, talking about the Hell in a Cell, how they're gonna be the Fiend versus Seth Rollins inside Hell in a Cell. And just, and basically, like, you know, little rambling rabbit popped up telling Seth Rollins, to basically run away as fast as he can, get away from the situation. And Bray Wyatt, you know, implied that, you know, the Fiend might have some more to say on the subject. So that's pretty fun. And then after this, we had apparently some type of tag team champion summit where it was going to be the Revival and Rude and Ziggler, but then that got interrupted by Braun Strowman, because before that, Braun Strowman was backstage saying who the next person that goes out in the ring, they're going to get these hands. And, you know, it was what it was. Strowman came out, beat the shit out of all of them. And then we followed this up with the OC, you know, Styles, Gallows, and Anderson against Cedric Alexander and the Viking Raiders, which I thought was going to be a really cool match, but kind of much like with AJ Styles and Cedric Alexander, it was kind of a squash, and, you know, Cedric took the L for this one, so I'm not really sure where they're going with Cedric Alexander from here. Which, speaking of that was another apparent bullshit report that I'd heard from saying Dave Meltzer that Vince wanted to bury Cedric Alexander just because. Which, I mean, some fans who hate Vince McMahon will believe anything, but just, are you sure about this one? Whatever. But then we followed it up with the King of the Ring finals, Baron Corbin versus Chad Gable, which, I mean, again, I'm annoyed that it wasn't on Clash of Champions, but at the same time, you know, Clash of Champions was so loaded that it's better that this one was saved for Raw, because this was actually, you know, just like I said with Strowman's, you know, Universal title match, that was probably his best match. I would say maybe this was Baron Corbin's best match since coming to the main roster. You know, just like I said with the other matches on Clash of Champions, like, it told a great story. I was into it. I was legitimately on the edge of my seat throughout this one, especially towards the end, where it could have gone either way. And that it looked a lot like Chad Gable was going to win, especially when he had him in the ankle lock and did the grapevine like Kurt Angle. And I was like, again, I was on the edge of my seat, just like, oh shit, they're going to give it to Gable. They're going to give it to Gable. But then Corbin won with a really cool reversal into the end of days. Is it the end of days? Yeah. Like, they would look, it was going to be like Tornado DDT, but then he caught him and reversed it into the end of days. With Baron Corbin is now the King of the Ring, and I even said it on Twitter, let the heat, you know, begin. Because I knew the fans were going to be so pissed off, and yeah, I get it. I wanted Gable to win too. But at the same time, Baron Corbin could get more longevity out of being King of the Ring as a gimmick than others would. You know, he could be like a King Booker, you know, or a King Mabel, where it became a big part of their character. So, you know, yeah, I want Gable to win, but I'm anxious to see where they take, you know, King Baron Corbin from here. And then we had apparently the gender reveal for Maria Kanellis' baby, where they said it was a boy, so that was cool. But then she said, oh, and the father of the child is Ricochet. And then Mike Kanellis got mad and challenged, told Ricochet, I'll meet you in the ring, we're gonna fight. So they had a quick, like, minute and a half, 2 minute match where Ricochet beat the shit out of him and won. And then Maria Kanellis saying, obviously Ricochet's not the father, the real father of my baby. And then Rusev came out. That's right, Rusev. Now, whether or not the storyline is going to be that he is the baby daddy, but it's nice to see Rusev back on my screens, because I have missed Rusev. I love Rusev. Just probably not the best storyline I would have gone with to bring him back, but sometimes something is better than nothing. So then he came out and he fought Mike Kanellis, and that ended in like a whatever kind of thing. But just, you know, Rusev, he looks in great shape. He has a little mustache now, which if I tried sporting that same mustache, people would say I look like a pedophile, but he makes it work. But yeah, great to see Rusev back. Where are they going to take this story going forward? I have no fucking idea, but we whatever. But yeah, now coming to the other part that they had talked about it early in the show, but, you know, this, because I'm looking at the results from WWE.com, even though I watched Raw itself. I like reading the actual posts from the website so I can, you know, remember what happened on this, because lately I don't have the best memory. You know, because as I get older, my memory is not as strong as it once was. I know I'm only 32, but still. But, yeah, as I said, they were in Knoxville, Tennessee, which I did not know until they mentioned it when they showed R-Truth and Carmella at a museum somewhere. And when Mayor Glenn Jacobs, who, of course, is WWE legend Kane, he comes in and offers to give R-Truth a tour of the Knoxville campus. So that's pretty cool. And then, you know, they went over to the Nyland Stadium, or Nayland, anyone from Knoxville that's listening to this, I apologize for not saying it right. But yeah, he brought him over there and then brought someone who he told him was a police officer, but then he opened up his jacket and he's a referee. And then Truth tries to run away, runs into the goalpost of the stadium, and then Kane runs over and Glenn runs over and pins him 1-2-3 to be the new 24/7 champion. Then he gets into his limo to go to the arena where Raw was happening, and R-Truth was hanging on the roof of the limo. So then when Glenn gets out, Truth jumps off, pins him 1-2-3 as well, and he, you know, Glenn gets up and grabs Truth by the throat, you know, like classic Kane. And then Truth tries to calm him down, saying like, nah, you know, if you were the, you know, 48, you know, 7, you know, Eurocontinental Television, you know, 7-11 champion, this is all you'd be doing, blah, blah, blah. And so then he says, like, you're right, let's go enjoy the show. So they go inside the arena. Then we follow this up with Rey Mysterio versus Cesaro, which was a pretty fun match, and I can't remember. Was this the first time that they had wrestled before? Because I don't know. I can't remember. Honestly, can't remember. But this was a really good match, as of course it would be. I mean, it's Rey Mysterio and Cesaro. They can only have good matches. So, and Mysterio won, of course, because they're building him up with, you know, trying to, you know, work his way back up to the top of the WWE. So this is a good story, and I'm very into it. And what the payoff is going to be, the big blow off is going to be for it, I don't know, but I'm guessing it's going to tie into what his son Dominic was saying about, you know, when I make my debut, I want to be, you know, in a tag team with my dad. So we'll see where that goes. And then we had a tag team match with the women. It was Bayley and Sasha Banks versus the Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross. And this one was an okay match. It was mainly Bayley and Sasha Banks just beating the shit out of Bliss and Cross for the most part. So I'm guessing, and then, you know, Bayley and Banks won, which I guess puts them in line as number one contenders for the women's tag titles. So I have no idea where that's gonna go. But after the match, they were gonna, you know, Charlotte Flair apparently had come out when, sorry, just my mind is blanking out right now. Let me take a drink real quick. But yeah, because apparently at some point in the match, Bliss had injured herself. I don't know if it was legitimate or if it was just part of the story. But yeah, you know, then Cross tapped out. Then Charlotte Flair came out and tried to beat up Bayley with the chair because they were going to do some more stuff with the chair. And then Becky Lynch came out and got into it with Sasha. And then Sasha challenged Becky to another match at Hell in a Cell, and then Becky Lynch decided, let's have it inside Hell in a Cell, so we're gonna have the second women's Hell in a Cell match with Becky Lynch versus Sasha Banks, and that's gonna be a fun one, because if their match at Clash of Champions was anything to go on, this is gonna be an awesome match. And then we followed this one up with Lacey Evans versus Dana Brooke. It was just kind of a match that was just there, but it was mainly to forward the storyline that Evans has with Natalya, because she won the match by putting Dana Brooke in the sharpshooter. I mean, I was excited because, you know, Dana Brooke was back on TV, and I like Dana Brooke. But yeah, you know, Lacey Evans won the match with the sharpshooter, so now that's going to keep that storyline going for a little bit longer. And then we had the main event. It was Seth Rollins versus Robert Roode for, you know, I guess, you know, just to build off of what happened at Clash of Champions, and Seth Rollins won, obviously, even though it was kind of a, you know, nothing thing. It was a DQ win, because Dolph Ziggler got involved, but then the OC came out and started fucking him up as well. But then Kane showed up, which was a nice surprise, and he took out the OC and Roode and Ziggler, and then just as he's about to do his, you know, fire pyro, you know, from the ring post, the Fiend made his presence known once again and put the Mandible Claw on Kane, took him out, and then the show closed with the Fiend in Seth Rollins' face, laughing very creepily as the lights were flashing, and then the show itself closed out with about 2 minutes of the Firefly Funhouse logo on the screen and the music playing, but everything kept getting distorted and flipping upside down, and the screen was changing colors, and it was all creepy as fuck, and even I got a little creeped out by it. And speaking of upside down, even at the beginning of the show, when they were during the opening interview segment with Rollins and Bray Wyatt, even when they were showing the matchup screens, that was flipped upside down, and I don't know if that was on purpose because of the Fiend, but that was pretty cool. I like that. And just, yeah, just started with Bray Wyatt and the Fiend, and it ended with the Fiend, so I don't know, like I said, Bray Wyatt and The Fiend is the best thing happening on WWE, and it's the best reason for me to watch Monday Night Raw. And now, we come to SmackDown Live. And this one, let me see on here. I have to refresh. Alright, this one has everything listed in reverse, so I gotta start from the bottom. Now we're here. But yeah, the beginning of the show was a six-person tag match, or six-man tag match. New Day versus Randy Orton and The Revival, which, like I said before, I love that Randy Orton and The Revival have become a team. So even The Revival's tights that they debuted at Clash of Champions had two bulldogs and a viper in the middle. I'm guessing it was a viper, so that's pretty cool. New Day won, which, I mean, it was a pretty good match, just didn't really do much to further any of those stories. But then after the match, when New Day was celebrating, they got interrupted by a returning Brock Lesnar, which, you know, he hasn't been on SmackDown since 2004, when he was an exclusive member of the SmackDown roster. So that was a nice little surprise to me, at least. And of course, Paul Heyman was there, and they came out because they wanted to officially challenge Kofi Kingston to a WWE Championship match on the SmackDown premiere on Fox for Friday, October 4th. And of course, Kofi Kingston accepted it. And then, you know, Brock Lesnar, you know, put the exclamation point with an F5. So, of course, a lot of fans are upset about this because, like, oh no, you know, now it's, you know, Brock Lesnar comes back just to, you know, take away Kofi's belt and blah, 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 blah. And it's just like, yeah, I know, but just at the same time, just be happy that it's somebody different. But at the, but for me, I'm actually on the side where I think that Kofi is actually gonna win. I don't know for sure that he would, but it is my belief that he will win. I don't know why I believe it so much, but just, I don't know, just something about the whole thing just makes me think that Kofi is gonna win and retain his championship against Brock Lesnar. What makes me believe that? I really don't know. That's just how I see it. But it's good because this will be Kofi's first real challenge. And I know because apparently with the Fox deal, Fox wants to make SmackDown one of their, you know, their biggest must-see programs, especially for it being on Friday nights. So, and they want to have the biggest stars. And Brock Lesnar is a big star in wrestling and in sports. So having him feature the main event of that premiere show, you know, it's a win-win for WWE and for Fox. So, then we follow that up with a sit-down interview between Eric Rowan and Michael Cole, which, you know, Michael Cole, I don't like him that much on commentary, but I actually like when he does these sit-down interviews with wrestlers backstage. Because he was a legitimate broadcast journalist before WWE hired him, so he gets to use his journalism experience by doing these backstage segments like that. And I don't know, like, for whatever reason, I just enjoy these interview segments more than when he's on commentary. Even though he's improved a lot, you know, and with his 20-something years with WWE, because I think he debuted in 97, so 22 years at least he's been with WWE, and he has improved a lot. I mean, he's no JR during the Attitude Era, but he's improved a lot. But like I said, I prefer him during these, you know, backstage interview segments. But just basically the interview, it's just, because he was asking him, like, what Luke Harper has to do with all this, and he says Rowan didn't want to comment on that, and just, yeah, and, you know, just go watch for yourself. It was kind of a confusing segment. And then we were supposed to have Shinsuke Nakamura versus Ali, but the match never got started because Nakamura and Sami Zayn just took Ali out, you know, before the bell even rang, and, you know, maybe that's going to be, you know, the storyline going forward with the Intercontinental title. But we'll see how things go on SmackDown next week, if they even follow up on this. But then we had Kevin Owens emerge in the audience because he had bought a ticket for the show, because last week on SmackDown, when they were at the Garden, the show closed with Kevin Owens getting fired by Shane McMahon. So Kevin Owens came out and was sitting there because he had bought a ticket, and then Shane McMahon was served with a lawsuit, apparently, for a wrongful termination. And as Kevin Owens put it, you know, you fined me at SummerSlam because I put my hands on an official, and then last week I was the official for your match, so you put your hands on me, and you fired me, so, you know, basically trying to say, like, you fined me because I touched an official, and then you touched an official, so it should be, like, you know, basically tit for tat kind of thing. So then I'm guessing they're going to have another match at Hell in a Cell, maybe, or at the Fox premiere on SmackDown, because they never really specified that. But just basically saying that, that if KO wins this whole thing, then he gets a $25 million settlement out of it, and that Shane would basically be fired, or that it would allow Kevin Owens to fire Shane O'Mac. So, I don't know. It's a weird kind of thing because, I don't know, it's just, Because they've been building up Kevin Owens as like a second coming of Stone Cold Steve Austin kind of thing, and just, I mean, Stone Cold wouldn't have done this in the Attitude Era events. He wouldn't have, you know, when Stone Cold got fired at Judgment Day in 1998 because he didn't call the WWF title match right down the middle, Vince fired him, and Austin's response: hijacked the show the next night, made Vince McMahon piss his pants thinking he was going to shoot him in the head with a pistol. So, was it a pistol? Or, I don't know. He basically had a gun to Vince's head, made Vince think he was going to kill him, and it was a toy gun, and Vince pissed his pants. That was his payback. And then he beat the shit out of him afterwards. And here, Kevin Owens, he gets fired, and his response: I'm going to sue you. I don't know. Not really the most badass response to that, but that's just me. And we followed this up with Charlotte versus Sasha Banks, which was pretty cool. I mean, I had no idea this match was even happening, but I mean, they've always had good matches, so I didn't mind it. But it ended in DQ when Bayley decided to get involved in the match and attack Charlotte. But rather than Becky Lynch coming out like we all expected it to be, Carmella showed up, which, I mean, fans didn't really know how to react because they were a little confused, but because, you know, and they did reference it a few months back, that Carmella and Bayley were best friends, like, for real best friends back in NXT, but, you know, I guess the main roster fans weren't familiar with that, so guessing, you know, she's going to be inserted into all this, at least from the SmackDown side of the story, but who knows what's going to happen going forward with this one. And then we had the official coronation of Baron Corbin with the King of the Ring, which, and then he summoned Chad Gable to, you know, for his, you know, again, his official coronation, and then Chad Gable decided, fuck this, and he tackled Baron Corbin and in the process destroyed the throne for the King of the Ring, and did a, you know, gnarly looking German suplex on him. I think that's what he did. I don't know. Either way, that's not what he did. German suplex was on the match on Raw. But yeah, he took the scepter and hit him with it. A piece of it flew into the audience. I hope nobody got hit with that. And then he ripped up the robe, and then stomped on the crown, threw the pieces of the throne outside at him. So they're gonna continue this story, obviously. And I'm intrigued to see where it goes because, you know, I like Chad Gable, and like I said, with Baron Corbin as King of the Ring, you know, he can go as far with that as he wants to, because like I said, he can be like a King Mabel or a King King Booker or King Barrett, or even when Kurt Angle won King of the Ring, he wore the crown and had the cape and the scepter with him for like a month, you know. Because Baron Corbin is that arrogant, self-centered, you know, dipshit heel who would you know excel with that kind of thing. So I look forward to seeing how much more they do with that. And then we had, you know, a nothing match with Heavy Machinery against the B Team. So moving on from that, and then we had the closing segment. It was Daniel Bryan coming out, basically just wanting to understand what the fuck was going on with Eric Rowan. And Eric Rowan was basically saying, like, I'm not a puppet, I'm not your puppet anymore, and blah, blah, blah. And Brian was like, you know, like, you want to do something about it, just, you know, just do it. And then Rowan and Luke Harper decided to just team up and beat the shit out of Brian. Roman Reigns came out to help him, and they took him out as well, and just, I don't know, the way this story keeps going, I have no idea where it's gonna go, you know, after this, but I like it a lot because I like that they're actually, it's a story that's been building up for almost two months at this point, because it started like about 2 or 3 weeks before SummerSlam, like 1 or 2 weeks before SummerSlam at least, and then here we are like 2 pay-per-views after it started, and it's obviously they're gonna have at least one more match with Hell in a Cell, maybe another one after that, but I mean, I like when they give storylines a chance to build. And I know a lot of people probably might not be a big fan of this one, but you know what? It's a main event segment, and it doesn't have to be about the championship. So, I do love that part of it because, Luke Harper and Eric Rowan and Daniel Bryan, they're all in a main event segment without it having to be about being champion. And it's an interesting and intriguing story, in my opinion at least. So, where they go from here? Oh, I guess we'll just have to see next week.
Shock the system.
Now we have the USA Network premiere of NXT. Well, because US NXT coming to the USA Network is supposed to be a 2-hour show. But at least for this week, I don't know if I'm guessing it's going to be the same for until the Suits ends their show because that's the final season. But only the first hour of the 2-hour NXT aired on the USA Network. The rest of it aired on the WWE Network. So I'm only going to cover the part that premiered on USA because that's what this segment is for, discussing the USA premiere of NXT Live. And for just that 1 hour, I loved it a lot. It was a great way to introduce the television audience to the NXT product. And we kicked it off with a number one contenders match, for the women's NXT Women's Championship. It was Candice LeRae versus Mia Yim, Io Shirai, and Bianca Belair. And this was a really fun, fast-paced, hard-hitting, exciting match because, excuse me, all four women are ridiculously talented, and we all know that, they can all have the best match on the card, any night. Even though Mia Yim and Shayna Baszler at TakeOver Toronto was, I don't know, maybe they were both just off that night because both of them are great wrestlers and just, I don't know, they didn't, something about that match, they just didn't click. I don't know what it was. Really, neither of them are at fault. It's just for whatever reason they didn't click, and they're great wrestlers, but they just, one on one, it didn't click for that time. I don't know. But it was a great match and another one that had me on the edge of my seat the entire time. But Candice LeRae, Mrs. Johnny Wrestling, came out on top, and she will be challenging Shayna Baszler for the NXT Women's Championship, and that match will be going down. Let me see if it's listed, if they have it written on here, because I don't remember if it's going to be next week or the week after. But either way, she is the number one contender for the NXT Women's Championship match. And then the other match we had on here was Cameron Grimes versus Sean Maluta. Cameron Grimes, of course, a lot of us remember him as Trevor Lee back in Impact Wrestling. This one was a bit of a surprising squash match. It was literally just ring the bell, boom, and that was it. So just, yeah. But then we had the main event of this hour. It was the NXT North American Championship. Velveteen Dream defending against Roderick Strong, and the big hype for this is that, will the prophecy be fulfilled with Undisputed Era own having all the gold in NXT? And this is another one that had me on the edge of my seat because I am a fan of both men. I love Velveteen Dream. I've been a fan of him since, seeing him on Tough Enough back in 2015 when he was still going by his real name, Patrick Clark. And Roderick Strong, I've been a fan of him since Ring of Honor back in 2006. Got to see him live at the first Ring of Honor pay-per-view in 2007, and been a fan of him ever since then. And just this, like, anyone who's never watched NXT that tuned in for this one this week on USA, this match, I hope, is gonna make them want to come in and just, tune in every week now, because this was a awesome match. Again, a fast-paced, hard-hitting, on the edge of your seats. Could have gone either way at any point, but ultimately, the prophecy was fulfilled, and Roderick Strong is your new NXT North American Champion, and the Undisputed Era has all the gold. They have the tag team, the North American, and the NXT championships, and doesn't look like anybody's gonna stop them anytime soon. They are the dominant force of NXT, and I fucking love this. They definitely shocked the system this night. Alrighty, now, they made the official announcement earlier this week that we will be seeing the return of the WWE draft for SmackDown and Raw, and it'll be airing on Friday Night SmackDown, which is what they're going to be calling it now, I guess, on October the 11th, and then on Monday Night Raw, October the 14th. I'm going to read what is written on here from the WWE.com article. It says, there's about to be a draft in here. The destinies of WWE superstars will be determined during a two-night WWE draft taking place live on Friday Night SmackDown on October 11th on Fox and Raw on October 14th on USA Network. On both nights of the draft, superstars from Raw and SmackDown will appear along with personalities from Fox and NBC Universal programming to announce a select picks that will determine the rosters for each distinct brand. Stick with WWE Digital for more news on the WWE draft as it develops. Yeah, since they're doing the WWE draft again, with this, this time like that, I guess this means that we're not gonna get the wild card rule anymore. I mean, unless they're gonna, announce that, officially on the show when we get there. But I mean, if it means that the wild card rule is done, then thank God, because the wild card rule never made any sense. It was never consistent. It sucked. I don't know why they did it. Well, I know why they did it. They were desperate, but still. No one was a fan of it. At least no one that I have talked to was a fan of it. So, if this signals the end of the wild card rule, and that the brand split is actually going to mean something again, then great. I look forward to it very, very much. But I am intrigued that they say that NBC Universal and Fox personalities are going to be present for both of those, which just, I guess, to give it a genuine, legitimate sports feel to it, which, hey, I mean, if it works for them, that's fine. I don't mind it. No sweat off my back or whatever is the phrase. But yeah, I mean, who would I want to see get drafted to where? I really don't know. I mean, because is it going to be like it has been before, like when they did the draft in 2016? Like, are they going to count NXT as well? Because I know, because 205 Live is merging with NXT since they're going to be on the USA Network now, which means sucks for 205 Live. But at the same time, since NXT is going to be a 2-hour program now, you got to fill up that second hour somehow. So integrating the Cruiserweight division into NXT is a good way to do that. But, and hopefully the draft will see the right people go where they deserve. Not really sure what I mean by that, but just hopefully it'll be a draft that benefits both brands. But only time will tell. And that is it for this edition of the Men in Tights podcast. I hope you all enjoyed listening and heard some stuff that you liked, or if you didn't like it, thanks for tuning in anyway. And make sure you tune into the bonus podcast that I have coming for you guys tomorrow, because I'll be talking about the Jurassic World Battle at Big Rock short film, the big cast reveal for James Gunn's Suicide Squad that everyone was going apeshit insane for last weekend, the apparent news that Robert Downey Jr. will be in Black Widow, the rumors of an apparent Silver Surfer movie in the works, Matt Reeves' The Batman being based on the Long Halloween comic series, and I will be celebrating Batman Day. So I do hope you will enjoy that one. And please check out my retro film reviews for The Lion King and Masters of the Universe and Adventures of Baron Munchausen if you can. If you haven't already, check out my worst to best about the Spider-Man movies. And also, keep checking in with me so know when I'll be debuting my classic wrestling pay-per-views and video game reviews. Just whenever I do premiere them, you'll find out, because just, you know, trying to deliver the best content and as much variety as I possibly can. And as always, don't forget to subscribe to the Manatides Podcast on Spotify, Google Podcasts, CastBox, Radio Public, or YouTube. And follow me on Twitter at IamFositude for all podcast updates. And follow me on Instagram at Fositude to enjoy the funny stuff that I post on there. And follow me on Vero at Fositude to enjoy everything, I guess. And then support me on support the podcast by donating on Patreon if you would like to help improve my overall quality of the brand and the podcast. Contribute to my Hall of Justice. It's only $5 a month, and you'll be able to contribute to the podcast. It's with, you know, your creative ideas, and, you know, such as, like, you know, topics for the podcast, new segments in between those podcasts, and, you know, other fun stuff. You know, the link for that will be in the description. And check out the official Manatides Podcast store. And have plenty of t-shirts and long sleeve shirts and tank tops, baseball shirts, kids t-shirts, stickers, wall art, pins. Just debuted a brand new t-shirt on Wednesday. With Spider-Man face. It says, you know, I'm just a nerdy kid from Queens. Link to that's the store will be in the description for that as well. And as always, thank you all so much for tuning in and for subscribing. I love and appreciate every single one of you who do. I truly and genuinely do. It means so much to me. It really does. And I hope you all enjoy your weekend and that you spend it with your loved ones if you can. And if you have to work, you're earning money. You're making an honest living. But this has been the Manatides Podcast. I am Julian, and I will see you all, well, tomorrow. Bye.